You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We've got a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now, a shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and yes, the Kai PA glasses are back, but only while supplies last, and I'm taking some of them. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate. At the risk of repeating myself, jobs, also housing, and the return of the business meal. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday today, the 29th of August. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Jobs is where we started yesterday. Jobs is where we start today. Jobs may well be where we start tomorrow. Don't know yet, because paychecks and who's getting them are the heart and soul of making this economy go. They are also, not coincidentally, at the heart of the big economic challenge right now. Inflation and interest rates and where and whether Jay Powell and the Federal Reserve might be able to find a happy medium. Last week in his big speech at Jackson Hole, the Fed chair said, not for the first time, the central bank is going to keep raising interest rates to bring inflation down, if appropriate. That's a quote, if appropriate. And I mention all that because we got new jobs data today that the Fed can add into its calculus. Job openings in this economy fell last month to about 8.8 million, the lowest level since March 2021, a sign, perhaps, that the labor market is cooling down just a little bit. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino starts us off with the job openings and labor turnover survey.
If you're the Fed, sitting at the figurative controls of the jumbo jet that is the economy, and you're looking out of the cockpit at these signals from the labor market,
I think this is very much consistent with the soft landing that everyone is sort of hoping and praying for.
Mark Hamrick is a senior economic analyst at Bankrate. He says the Fed might see indications in the JOLTS data that supply and demand in the job market are balancing out.
We now see the number of job openings relative to the number of unemployed, about 1.5. That certainly is getting into better alignment.
When there are way more jobs than people to fill them, employers have to pay more to attract workers, says Aaron Tarasas, chief economist at job site Glassdoor.
Ultimately, what the Fed cares about is wages.
There are still 1.5 times more jobs than unemployed people, so
it's still not a cool labor market, right?
But Layla O'Kane, a senior economist at Lightcast, says it is showing multiple signs of cooling. Not only did job openings decrease in July, they were also revised down for June. The number of workers quitting also dropped, falling back in line with pre-pandemic levels after soaring during the Great Resignation.
It's showing there's a little bit more stability. Employers can plan ahead a little bit better, and they're no longer having to push those wages even higher.
But Aaron Sojourner, senior economist with the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research, says it doesn't look like winter is coming too quickly. For example, like in the Alps last week, where record heat was followed by snowstorms.
That's not what we want. We don't want wild swings. We don't want unpredictable tumult.
Layoffs held steady in July, suggesting a cool down that's maybe more like winter in coastal California than the deep freeze of alpine peaks. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, look, here is the logic coming out of that JOLTS report as far as traders are concerned. They are betting the Fed is about ready to stop raising interest rates. All they need is the Friday, August jobs report to come in not too hot, not too cold, but just right. And they are banking. In that case, the central bank will be done. Thus, the happy music today it shall be. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Thanks in part to the Fed and thanks in part to the bond market. Mortgage rates, as we have been telling you, are as high as they have been in better than 20 years. And yet, The CoreLogic Case-Shiller Home Price Index for June came out this morning. Five straight months of higher home prices, mortgage rates notwithstanding. Thus, these are trying times for would-be first-time buyers. Now, if you can pay cash, totally different story, as Marketplace's Elizabeth Troval reports.
In today's housing market, a lot of renters are not renting by choice. Allie Wolf with real estate data firm Zonda says they're stuck.
I've never seen a more bifurcated housing market with winners and losers.
Winners, like people who already own homes and are looking to move to cheaper states like Arizona and Texas. And boomers, who are hitting retirement age. Daryl Fairweather is with Redfin.
Say you own a home in Washington, D.C., you paid off your mortgage, you have all cash. You can take that and, you know, put some of it towards a condo in Florida.
She says cash purchases, which allow folks to bypass high mortgage rates altogether, are increasingly common.
During the pandemic, the share was closer to 1 in 4 homes bought with cash, but now it's closer to 1 in 3.
As for renters looking to buy their first home, or at least the ones who don't have troves of cash lying around,
it's tough right now.
Thomas LaSalvia is with Moody's Analytics.
With less supply and maybe less of an overall budget because of high interest rates, it really limits you.
Monthly payments are much higher for people financing a new house today compared to just a few years ago, says Lawrence Yoon with the National Association of Realtors.
Given that it is much higher mortgage rate, the monthly payment is essentially double.
And these barriers for first-time buyers have a big impact, says Zonda's Allie Wolf.
We're creating massive wealth inequality in the U.S. just based on who owns a home and who doesn't.
She says while U.S. homeowners are sitting on mountains of home equity, renters are increasingly cut out of the market. I'm Elizabeth Troval for Marketplace.
Two unrelated but parallel headlines by way of setting up our next story. Hurricane Idalia bearing down on the Gulf Coast of Florida is the first. The second is from the Wall Street Journal. Americans are bailing on their home insurance, it read. And if you dig into the article, the paper reports that 12% of homeowners in this economy are choosing not to carry insurance. Marketplace's Samantha Fields takes it from there.
If you have a mortgage, you're required to have homeowners insurance. But if your home's paid off, you are not. Loretta Waters at the Insurance Information Institute says most people still do, but the number who don't is rising.
You have about 88% of people that do carry it, as opposed to a few years ago where it was about 92 to 95% of people that had homeowners insurance.
Of those who go without insurance, nearly half make less than $40,000 a year. And with coverage getting a lot more expensive, especially in disaster-prone states like Florida and California, former FEMA Administrator Craig Fugate says people are struggling to afford it.
This generally tends to be people that are older in life or retirees, and they have to make decisions about what they can afford.
When people have to choose between keeping the lights on, buying food or prescriptions, and paying their homeowner's premium, he says insurance is one of the first things to go. A lot of people also assume if something does happen, the federal government will step in and help.
And that's a very dangerous financial mistake. The federal government's not designed to do that.
Home insurance is key to recovering from a disaster, says Carolyn Kuski at the Environmental Defense Fund.
Households with insurance recover better, recover faster, have lower financial burdens post-disaster. We also have research showing that as more people in a community have insurance, the local economy recovers faster as well.
But with climate change making extreme weather more common and insurers facing mounting losses, Amy Bach at the consumer advocacy nonprofit United Policyholders says we're at an inflection point.
With the private sector behaving like private for-profit companies do, which is moving out of areas that they don't think they're going to make money in, the imperative is on public agencies, public officials to come up with some new concepts.
Because, Bach says, it's in everyone's interest for people to be able to afford to buy homes and protect them. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
We When you go to the grocery store and you pick out a carton of eggs or a package of chicken or anything else on the shelves for that matter, you trust the food is not going to get you sick, assuming you cook it properly. And that is true for the most part, but the food supply chain isn't perfect. The government investigates foodborne disease outbreaks every year, and millions of people do get sick. Some do wind up hospitalized or worse, and salmonella is one of the top culprits, often associated with those eggs or the chicken sitting in your cart. The poultry industry processes around 10 billion chickens a year, and it has wanted a better way to detect salmonella for years, and now they might just have it. From Harvest Public Media, Eric Schmidt has the story.
First off, I should say there's nothing wrong with how the poultry industry tests for salmonella or any other bacteria right now. It's just that those tests take time.
And that's one of the frustrating things with microbiology.
Jim Dixon is a professor in Iowa State's Animal Science Department who works with meat and poultry products.
Realistically, in most cases, we're talking about 3 days.
3 days to get a test result back. And by that time, Dixon says the chicken is usually on its way to the grocery store. Now, most chickens carry some form of salmonella, and the CDC estimates it's in one out of every 25 packages of raw chicken. When it's cooked, there's usually not a problem, but the risk goes up when there's a higher load of salmonella in that chicken. That's where research inside this lab at the University of Missouri comes in. Doctoral student May Abuhelua demonstrates one sensor that can detect salmonella in minutes. She takes a sample of chicken and deposits it into a small plastic rectangle where the sensor is.
I just inject my sample and then wait a couple of minutes, and then I can read very clear here.
Abuhelua shows a graph on a computer screen with points on it that correspond to salmonella molecules or other pathogens.
If we can read the signal that in this point, we can know that, okay, we have this kind of virus or bacteria or something.
This test is just available in a lab right now, but the idea is to make it possible to test anywhere in the chicken supply chain. It would be a way to test the chicken beyond that one time. You could have sensors at the farm, the grocery store, and even more points at processors.
At every operation, for example, carcass washing, defeathering, the cutting.
Haitao Li is chair of the Supply Chain Analytics Department at the University of Missouri St. Louis. With sensors at more points, Li says researchers could see salmonella contamination along the whole supply chain in real time.
If we know the level of contamination risk, we might speed up the shipment of some goods or shorten their storage time.
And catching contamination early or at more points along that chain could mean fewer people get sick. But these sensors will need to be easy to use and cost-friendly if the companies that process, ship, or distribute chicken are going to buy in. Still, Carlton Adams likes the idea.
You know, it could potentially be game-changing for us. First of all, we would have better information up front.
Adams is with Operation Food Search, a food bank in St. Louis. On this weekday morning, cars and trucks are outside a warehouse loading boxes of food that will go to people in need in Missouri and Illinois. Adams says this kind of salmonella testing would give his organization and the people they serve reassurance the food that they're getting is safe.
The knock-on effects of having contaminated food in a neighborhood is really troubling.
He says whole families can get sick, keeping kids from school or adults from work. There's promise in this new testing technology, but it's still years away from hitting the market. Adams says his food bank will be ready for it if and when that happens. In St. Louis, I'm Eric Schmid for Marketplace.
Coming up.
That final thump was like such a relief.
That is not something you hear every day. First, though, let's do the numbers. Oh, my. Oh, my. The very happy music. Dow Industrial's up 292 today. That's 0.9%. Close at 34,852. The NASDAQ added 238 points. That's 1.7%. There you go. Thus, the really happy music. 13,943 for the NASDAQ. S&P 500 increased 64 points, 1.5%, 44.97. I had a busy morning. Wasn't really paying attention to the markets. That's why I was surprised. Eric Schmidt was just telling us about the new research for salmonella testing. So let's check in on some of the major poultry suppliers, shall we? Tyson Foods and Pilgrim's Pride both added 0.7% today. Hormel buckled up 0.2%. The Biden administration, as you might have heard, released a list of 10 drugs that it wants to subject to pricing negotiations through Medicare, including prescription medications for diabetes and heart failure and arthritis. So, investors in Big Pharma mostly took that news in stride. Prices at Johnson & Johnson and Eli Lilly, share prices that is, pretty much unchanged. And Merck ticked up 1%. Pfizer down 0.2% today. Bond prices went the other way, up. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note down to 4.11%. You're listening to Marketplace. You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We've got a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and yes, the Kai PA glasses are back, but only while supplies last, and I'm taking some of them. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. With return to the office, depending on your company, of course, is coming the return of the business meal. According to OpenTable, weekday lunch reservations in some cities have risen by double-digit percentages since last year. But honestly, the only thing worse than having spinach in your teeth at dinner is having spinach in your teeth at a work dinner, and nobody's enough of a friend to tell you. Ray Smith wrote about the return of the business meal for the Wall Street Journal the other day. Ray, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
For those who are unfamiliar or who have perhaps forgotten in the last three-plus-ish years, what's it like out there in the world of the in-person business meal?
It's as awkward as ever. business meals are back, but it's as awkward as ever.
Have we just forgotten how to do it, do you think?
That's part of it. You know, 2 years of being either, you know, isolated or remote, and not having the opportunities to do this, to meet in person for meals, some of us literally like forgot how to do that.
And then there is also an entire, well, not generation, but an entire set of new people in the workforce who don't really understand the concept of a business meal to begin with and so are at a disadvantage.
Exactly. And in fact, there have been classes on business meal etiquette for years, yeah, and they were in person and they were suspended during the pandemic. So those classes of students missed out on those lessons, and now they're being thrust into the business world for the first time, you know, without the benefit of having those skills or learning those skills. So it's challenging.
Is it still true that and look, I'm saying this as a guy who's trapped in a radio studio for most of the day, and so I don't actually get out to have business lunches, but they can be professionally helpful, we should say.
You know, that's a really good point, because there is a networking value to this face-to-face meeting that's outside of an office, that's in a sort of business social setting, if you will. But it's still seen as a good way to network and get to know people. And it's really seen as this networking opportunity that's sort of one-on-one, more personal, except when it's sort of a whole big networking banquet dinner affair. But it's really seen as a way to sort of get to know somebody outside of an official sort of office context.
Yeah, and we should say here, just to, you know, it's not just lunches, right, as I was alluding to. There are sort of cocktail parties where you got hors d'oeuvres in your hand and you're trying to hold a glass of wine and, you know, a napkin in your other hand and you go to bump elbows or whatever instead of a handshake. I mean, it gets a little rough.
It does get a little rough, and it's really this sort of, you're balancing a lot of things. First of all, you're hungry and you're nervous, but you're also in this setting where you're trying to impress other people, and you need a hand free if you want to shake hands or if you want to acknowledge somebody. And so it's hard to do when you're either holding a phone or you're holding a drink or you're holding an hors d'oeuvre. And it's also just really complicated to try to hold a conversation while you're also trying to eat or drink. So it's really just a lot of things that you're trying to balance and show that you have good table manners, but also you're good at banter and keeping eye contact and knowing when to sort of take a bite and not. So it's really challenging, and I think people take it for granted sometimes.
You know, it's funny, actually. What you described, it's a little bit of a test.
It is a test. And a lot of people fail. It can get really messy sometimes. So, you know, I personally tend to not eat. Like if there is at a cocktail event, I tend not to go for the hors d'oeuvres because I just know I'm inevitably going to get like food stuck in my teeth or something like that. Totally. Or spit out at somebody while I'm talking. So it's navigating a lot. It's very tricky.
Do you think it's worth it? Do you think it pays off? I mean, yes, there's a networking opportunity, but do you think, given the changes in the labor market, right, which we've talked about on this program and you've written about surely, do you think it pays off still, or has labor in this country changed so much that it's kind of a different gig?
It's a slightly different gig, but there's something about, I mean, it's an old adage, but it's about who you know. And so there is still some benefit to it. Even in this age where a lot of things are remote and businesses change, that face-to-face connection, one-on-one, even if it's just once, it can make a difference.
Ray Smith, he's a careers reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Ray, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
True story. My very first week at Marketplace, David Brancaccio took me out for a breakfast meal. A long time ago. Anyway, that's his meal of choice now because he hosts the Marketplace Morning Report, during which and for which he and his crew get out of bed real early to set you up for your economic day. Check it out. Elizabeth Trovall was telling us earlier about home prices. The S&P Case-Shiller Price Index out this morning, 5 up months in a row of higher housing prices. So picture this. You've got a young family, a toddler, another on the way. After a decade in Alaska, you're starting over in Wisconsin, and you need some place to live. Thankfully, you've got 10 acres of family farmland you can use. No house, though. Here's today's installment of our series, Adventures in Housing.
My name is Anna Knapp, and I live in Door County, Wisconsin. Someone suggested, why don't you put an ad in the paper and see if someone would be willing for you to take their house off their property and then, you know, just move it onto the land. We put an ad in the paper that said something like, young family looking to move your house onto our property with our contact information. That particular weekend, this local church that's about 5 miles north of us was meeting to decide what to do with this old church parsonage that they had. People told us that this little old lady rushed into the church with the paper. Look at this ad. Here we go. You know, we don't even have to tear down this house. It's a really good, sturdy house. It's a 1930s cottage style, 2 bedrooms and a bathroom. I think we were technically supposed to have given them $1, but that transaction never happened. I think they were just happy to be done with it. So it really was a good deal for everybody. If I remember right, it cost about $10,000 to move the house, maybe a little bit more. Basically, what they had to do was bring up this equipment to jack up the house, much like you would jack up a car.
they put these two long pieces across the whole structure that then became the bed of a semi-truck. We had to do things like work with the local police to close the road. As it moved through town, people came out of their businesses. It passed by a local bar, and people from the bar came out to watch this thing go by. Overall, the house held up. That final thump was like such a relief. This house has been so essential to the life that we have here. We were able to be in this house with no mortgage. That allowed me to be a work from home mom and be home with my kids before they went to school. I was able to start up an organic farm. It's been fun for our family to have experienced this and just all the adventures that have come along with it.
Anna Knapp in Door County, Wisconsin. Tell us, would you, about your adventures in housing wherever or whatever you are moving, even if it's a whole house. Marketplace.org is where you can do that. This final note on the way out today, it is a little bit wonky, but it's kind of important. Hat tip to Axios for picking up on a paper presented at the Fed's Jackson Hole Symposium last week. It's not all great views and mountain hiking out there, it seems. Anyway, a paper by economists at the IMF and the University of California, Berkeley, that says the high government debt levels that have kind of become the norm the past decade or so are probably here to stay. Demographic changes, the cost of transitioning to a green economy, higher interest rates, and oh, by the way, political polarization mean, and this is a quote, debt reduction, while desirable in principle, is unlikely in practice. All right, here we go. Your moment of economic context first, though, just because it's been a while and it is good to keep an eye on the oil markets just in general principle. Crude today, the U.S. benchmark West Texas Intermediate, just a bit above $81 a barrel on this, Tuesday. It's been in that $80 range for a while now. Gas, meanwhile, AAA says a gallon of regular national average, $3.82 a year ago, just about that same place, $3.85. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Dylan Mieten and Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Ellen Rolfes, Virginia K. Smith, and Tony Wagner. Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital and on-demand. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.